and welcome to the AI Podcast. I'm your host for all things self-driving, Katie Burke-Washabaugh. AI isn't only transforming the way people move, but how we transport goods as well. Consumer demand for fast and efficient delivery has steadily increased. In North America alone, hundreds of billions of packages are delivered each year, with more than 70% of freight moved by truck. At the same time, the industry faces widening driver shortages. Experts project that by the middle of this decade, the U.S. will be short as many as 200,000 truck drivers. With these persisting shortages and supply chain bottlenecks, autonomous driving offers a long-term solution. Apeksha Kumavat is the co-founder and chief engineer of autonomous delivery company Gatik. Founded in 2017, Gatik's mission is to deliver goods safely and efficiently using autonomous vehicles. Companies such as Walmart, Pitney Bowes, Georgia-Pacific, and Loblaws Supermarket in Canada are already using Gatik's fleet of medium-duty trucks on commercial delivery routes. In addition to joining us on the AI Podcast, Apeksha will be hosting a session at our GTC virtual conference on September 20th. Be sure to register today and tune in. In the meantime, let's jump into the episode. Apeksha, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Doing well, Katie. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Well, we're delighted to have you. And we can just jump right into my first question, which is, how did you end up in autonomous vehicle development in the first place?
That's an interesting question and a funny story behind it. I'm a gamer at heart. I grew up playing a lot of games, and my entryway to deep learning was actually through a lot of game development growing up. So I created my first game ever when I was 13 years old, and it was a very basic 2D game. But what happened after that was I got so much drawn into the development and the intricacies of game theory and different kinds of agent behaviors within the game. I started exploring a lot of neural network deep learning technologies to guide the agent behaviors, interactions, and a lot of that. And slowly, I found myself getting more and more drawn towards the real-world applications and robotics interaction of robots in the real world and the unique applications that were coming up at that time. I did my grad in grad studies and perception and navigation of mobile robots, both indoors and outdoors applications. This included security patrolling, campus autonomy of vehicles. And yeah, that's how I got into the whole autonomous vehicle space. After graduating, I essentially worked for a while with Ford on their self-driving platform, leading their perception systems team. And seeing how these technologies were evolving and the applications that could be enabled through this. One of the applications that I think all three of us, me and my other two co-founders, Surjan and Gautam, believe the same way. One of the applications that was extremely interesting, given where the state of technology is and how it's progressing, and some of the real customer pain points that we're solving right now, the middle mile or the B2B short-haul logistics space. Essentially, all three of us believe very strongly that it is the right kind of application to introduce autonomous vehicles in the public domain on public roads, and it will be one of the first applications to be commercialized.
Yeah, well, with that love of gaming, you would fit in very well with a lot of my NVIDIA colleagues. So what is Gatik's origin story? How did it come to be? Where does the name come from? Tell me everything.
Yeah. How many years it has been, and it's already nostalgic. We actually, all of us, three of us, we worked with each other at some point of time during school on different academic projects, working on different kinds of robots. Both Surjan and Gautam, they are my co-founders. Surjan is the CDO and Gautam is the CEO. Both of them are brothers. They started, I don't know, from ever. For always, they have been working in the robotics growing up, worked on several different humanoid robots. When we met together during the school, we just like had a great dynamics and different perspectives that we brought in. And it was just fun working on these projects. We, all three of us, are extremely passionate about this field. And after graduation, all three of us went on to work with different companies and different projects. But one of the things that was there in all three of our minds is the real-time application. There were a lot of promises being made in the autonomous vehicle space, but there was a huge disparity in terms of what the reality was and what could be achieved. there was very less focus on what were the business cases or use cases that could be realized using the technology in the near term, what was possible. So with that kind of lens, the thesis that we started narrowing upon was that we need to essentially think about the real customer pain point, something that the end customer actually values in terms of the solution. And the second thing was, what are some of the, how can we constrain or how can we structure the problem that we are able to realize a product in near term? And that's how we essentially landed up on one of the use cases that came to light was this whole growing middle mile hub and spoke operations for these customers. And it all just made sense. The technology, the use case and all of that just fit perfectly. And it all made sense. And I still remember I packed my bags. I was in Michigan. I packed my bags and drove cross country and got to the Bay Area. All three of us, we started working on Gupik. We founded this back in 2017. We started it. It's in a very typical Silicon Valley style out of our garage. All three of us were staying in the same house to cut down the costs. Started the day at 8 a.m. went all the way up to 12 a.m., 1 a.m. was the most productive times. That's how Gupik started. Back in 2017, we did our first autonomous run in March of 2018 when we got the permit in California. And since then, it has been the history. Like, we started deployments with Walmart in 2019. And since then, we have been working with a lot of different customers. Very recently, we announced our partnership with Pitney Bowes as well. I think he also asked about Gupik and where did the name come from. So Gupik is actually a Sanskrit word. It means progressive or fast. In Sanskrit. This was actually the name of a research team that was initiated by Arjun and Gautam several decades ago back in India. They essentially used to do a lot of workshop for people on humanoid robots. They used to go from university to university teaching these fundamentals and building the culture of following their passion for robotics. And fast forward 2017, when we were coming up with names, I think there was a great story and there was a history and the name all made sense. So that's how we came up with Gupik.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that was a Sanskrit word. Now, the title of your GTC session mentions the term structured autonomy. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what exactly that is.
Absolutely. I think a lot of folks who are working in robotics would very soon understand like what is the value of structured environments. So if you take a step back and think about applications or the industries and the applications that have seen automation, historically, some of the industries, like for example, industrial automation was the one that saw light very early on. Then we had warehouse robotics that saw automation as well. All these different applications, there is a common theme, and that just like makes sense as tasks that are repeatable, tasks that are something that you can define pretty well, are the ones that can be automated quickly or that can see automation sooner than the ones that are unstructured, chaotic, or much more dynamic in nature. So if you think about the same pattern and think about the autonomous vehicle industry or the autonomy on public roads, it's a complex task. Driving on public roads in an unstructured environment with a lot of different situations and scenario, it's a complex task. And there have been a lot of different companies started way back more than a decade ago that have been working on this problem, trying to address that. And all those applications are worthy to be solved and very glamorous. And however, there is a need, given where the state of technology is and how we see automation come about. It's not just about the technology, but the operationalizing piece as well. How do you operationalize this technology? There is a need, I would say, as the first application that sees automation or autonomy needs to be some way, in one way or the other, needs to be structured, needs to have some amount of constraint. And better define domain where this technology can be deployed and operationalized. That's where the whole idea about structured autonomy comes from. And the way we see it or the way we have defined and are addressing it is the use case that we're solving for, which is middle mile B2B short haul. This is essentially delivering goods from known location to known location, warehouses, distribution centers, retail stores for our customers, which are fixed, and deploying these vehicles between these locations, doing deliveries multiple times a day, 7 days a week in a repeatable fashion. So this is volumes with repeatability. It essentially is the perfect kind of use case to structure and create a domain that allows us to have an autonomy and technology that can be deployed sooner.
Yeah, and in addition to it being a great application for self-driving technology, there also seems to be a growing need for it. If you've glanced at the news in the past year or two, I think you know that the supply chain all over the world has been under immense stress from COVID and geopolitical situations. How do you think autonomous trucks can play a role in addressing these pressures?
Absolutely, Katie. I think this is something that we essentially breathe every day. This is the kind of problem that we essentially formed. The whole mission of Gathic revolves around this. If we look at how the supply chain is formed and the whole middle mile segment, the reason there is an acceleration in this particular segment and how the models are shifting, it's all driven from end consumer behavior. What does that mean? So we have, like, think about the orders that we place either for groceries, packages, or anything. No one wants to wait for their packages to be delivered, even for a day. They want it same day in 2 hours. And there are just so many different kinds of options that the consumers are looking for. Say, for example, having these packages either delivered to their doorsteps or getting it picked up at a store or on the curbside in 2 hour window or the same day. All these kinds of expectation. And at the end of all of this, the consumers are looking for lower and lower prices, even for deliveries. Like, they do not want to pay for the delivery either. So with all those expectations and end consumer behaviors, what is happening is it's stressing out the supply chain and the old traditional models that the supply chain was working based on. So if we think about how the models were before, we used to have these huge distribution centers somewhere outside the cities that would get inventories essentially using the long hauls or semis coast to coast. And then from these distribution centers, you would have a semi or class 8 truck doing these deliveries to the final retail stores either once a week or twice a week. Now, these kinds of frequencies are extremely slow in today's market. If an inventory is not there up on the shelf, these retailers or these companies are losing consumers to their competitors because there is always someone else who is giving the same stuff either the same day or next day. So these companies need to keep up with those high frequency replenishment models. So what's happening is there are newer and newer models coming up to sustain these kinds of consumer demands. And one of the more popular ones is the hub and spoke that you might have heard of. This is essentially the companies are moving their fulfillment centers closer and closer to the customers. And what's happening is at a large scale, these companies are essentially forming a hub and spoke network or a network of stores. So when you essentially place an order on your app today for a pickup at a Walmart store close to you, most likely that store wouldn't have all the things that you are looking for. What they do in the background is there are vehicles like ours essentially doing multiple trips between their stores, fulfilling the orders in that 2 hour or 4 hour windows, the same day windows. And what happens in that way is they're essentially increasing the capacity of inventory, the inventory capacity across the entire network instead of one single store. Now, when you go for that kind of model, what you're looking for is higher frequency replenishment, multiple vehicles, smaller loads, doing these deliveries multiple times a day, 7 days a week between these stores. Now, that's exactly the kind of segment that's growing, and that's the one that we are automating. There are newer models that are also coming up that are disrupting the traditional class 8 routes. So it's not just the hub and spoke that's coming up in the cities, but the distribution center to these fulfillment center routes, which were traditionally handled by Class 8s, even those are needing higher frequency replenishment. And those are also the ones, instead of Class 8s, the customers are going for multiple Class 6 vehicles doing these deliveries. One such example is our deployment and operations with Georgia Pacific in Dallas. We recently announced about it. Traditionally, they used to use Class 8 vehicles from one of their distribution centers in Dallas to 34 plus Sam's Club's locations doing deliveries once or twice a week. Instead, now they're using Class 6 vehicles provided by us doing these deliveries more than four times a week on those routes. So it's just the kind of end consumer behaviors that are essentially having this pull. And these companies essentially, they are needing to increase the capacity. They are needing to increase the amount of vehicles, but they still need to drop down the costs because the consumers are not ready to pay the increase in that. So to be able to sustain these models, they really need to, the autonomous vehicles are the answers. Driverless vehicles are the answers for them.
Now, in addition to being able to use a structured approach and dealing with more kind of predictable routes, what are the other advantages to developing autonomous driving for this middle mile application compared to other types of delivery like long haul or last mile?
I think the overall spread in the industry right now, if you look at the spectrum, we have the long haul on one hand, particularly in the AV industry, the companies that are targeting the supply chain or logistics. We have long haul or semis essentially doing coast-to-coast deliveries on highways on one end. And then we have the sidewalk robots or smaller form factor vehicles on the other end doing the last mile from store to consumer, essentially. And then essentially we have this whole middle mile that caters to everything in between. Deliveries from distribution centers, fulfillment centers to other fulfillment centers, retail stores, and all of that. If we look at the applications that most of the AV companies are going after, Gatik is the only company that's addressing middle mile and the vehicles on in this particular segment. If we compare the kind of, not just the vehicles that are being used, it's also the inherent technological advantage that we essentially get from the use case and the segment itself. So if we look on the, if we take a look at on the long haul side or the semi trucks side, the key challenges there from a technology standpoint, it has been a pretty straightforward application. These companies essentially are having these vehicles drive on highways, freeways, doing lane keep, cruise control, and all of that. However, the thing is, where these companies essentially hand off these vehicles are as soon as the highway ends, that's where the technology stops. Like essentially they have transfer hubs or drivers essentially come in as soon as the vehicle is off the highway. Now, even beyond just pure operational considerations for having these kinds of autonomy, the issue is around safety and regulations on those sides. Just imagine like these 80,000 pound plus vehicles doing 70, 75 miles per hour on these highways. You need to be damn sure that the system is safe and is working perfectly fine, right? So there is a lot of different kind of diligence and validation that they need to ensure even before they can do even one trip for these kinds of things. And furthermore, they don't even have the choice. Like, looking at the middle mile from our perspective, where we essentially can do a lot of optimizations in terms of the routes that we choose. Say, for example, we are going from point A to point B. A bag of potatoes won't complain that we are taking one unprotected left or are we taking three rights to get on the same road, right? Like, however, if you think about the long haul or even the end consumer side, you don't really have much choice in terms of what route you can take. You have just so much of handful of choices to go from when you're going coast to coast, right? So there are, regulations has been another key piece on that side. On a federal level, we do not really have anything that governs the federal legislation around autonomous vehicles. And that has been a challenge for interstate or applications that go through several states. What we are seeing is more fragmented legislation at state level. That has been one of the key enablers for us in that sense, because the states that we are essentially targeting and are working with, we either already have the framework and legislation that we are looking for, Or there is, given that we have been working with several different states, there has been a playbook and a way for us to communicate the safety validations and allowing us to essentially also enable those legislations in those areas with our partners. So there is a legislative play as well. We are like, it would be great to have federal framework, but from our perspective on the middle mile, we are not holding our breath for it. So
that's interesting. It never occurred to me that the interstate aspect of, you know, driving across state lines and having to deal with everything that comes with that.
Yes. And I think on the other side, of course, like you have the companies that are going for last mile. There are other challenges that from our perspective that we feel you just are working with a lot of different situations and combinations. You're the use case of anywhere, everywhere or geofenced areas, you essentially are working with a lot of different combinations that you need to develop for different situations that you need to develop and validate for. When it comes to middle mile, and when we say known routes, it's essentially the known nature of the domain, what kind of routes you would be deploying on. There's a lot of optimization and engineering that we can do just because of the nature of the use case. But beyond that, one of the key things that has helped us use this use case in terms of developing the technology is the kind of recovery behaviors, the kind of anomaly detectors, uncertainty estimations. There's just a lot of technological advantages that we can essentially use. And yeah, that has played out well, that has been validated. We are one of the only companies right now in the industry that has over 10 plus Fortune 500 customers already signed and deployed for. All these are revenue generating deployments, multi-year contracts. We essentially went through, we already had fully driverless operations enabled in Arkansas with Walmart last year, and we're expanding those in other sites with other customers as well.
What are the challenges specific to this particular application?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of the middle mile itself, as I described, like I would say it's a challenge and it's an advantage. Like the whole domain and the use case essentially has the is being stressed right now from an industry standpoint of how will this hub and spoke as well as how these vehicles will be essentially used in the growing hub and spoke model and growing on-demand delivery model. It has been something that these companies are essentially coming up with. And a lot of this is something that they are also relying on partners like us to define and help them define how can we come up with solutions that are next generation that can actually be sustainable in the long term. All the customers across all different verticals. So we are working with retailers, grocery suppliers, distributors, CPGs, e-commerce players, and a lot of other verticals. And it's the story is same across the board. There are certain, these end consumer behaviors, end consumer demands are just, there's just a whole disparity in the kind of costs that go into supporting something like this versus the price that the end consumers are willing to pay for it. So to be able to actually sustain or create a solution for that, it is a very real pain point for all these customers. And it's not just the autonomous vehicle technology, it's everything that goes around it, like the operations of autonomous vehicles, the ecosystem that we build with it, the infrastructure that we need to enable at the customer's side and the operations of it. There's a lot of insights and a lot of guidance. It's essentially a partnership that's forming. Even as we work with these customers, it's essentially, even with the, as we see, like the Fortune 500 companies, they are also looking at outside to actually find the solutions to these problems, right? So that has been a very exciting as well as insightful partnerships with these folks to help them understand what is possible, what are some of the solutions that can be actually created and deployed, having worked with so many different kinds of customers now.
Speaking of your customers, you know, I was looking at the list and, you know, you have Walmart and Loblaws, you know, these major grocery companies. And I was wondering, are there specific challenges to transporting food and, you know, perishable items compared with just your standard cargo and packages?
Yeah, I think across the board, one of the things that we essentially offer is customization of the platforms that we deploy for our customers. So there are a lot of different kinds of customizations that can be enabled on these trucks. So the kind of boxes that we have, they are multi-tent boxes. These essentially include everything from refrigeration, frozen goods to ambient temperature goods. So I think the less about challenge, but it's more about the different kinds of platforms that we have to support and the kind of variations that we offer to our customers. That has been one of the key learnings, as well as product suite that we essentially have rolled out. We have boxes that go from 11 foot all the way up to 26 foot, and customers that use it for various different kinds of goods. This can be packaged, just normal ambient temperature goods, all the way up to like paper goods and stuff, all the way up to groceries, frozen goods that need to be at a certain temperature all throughout the trip. So as I said, like, it's not just the technology that we are solving for. What we are solving for is the problem of middle mile, the problem of hub and spoke, and how does that infrastructure and operations actually play out using the core autonomy piece as a part of the overall solution.
What else have you learned thus far in your commercial deployments?
That's an interesting question. There's, in terms of all these different deployments that we have had with all the different customers, I think there's a lot of learning. But one of the things that I had been very surprised with when we initially started working in this particular domain, I think it's around the how much these customers actually value the real-time analytics and insights that we are creating out of these trucks. So traditionally, these fleets that are deployed for the customers, these retailers and CPGs and stuff, they essentially worked with certain very lean insights that come out of the chassis. Let's say, for example, when the truck is closer to a particular location, they might get a geofenced notification that, hey, the truck is approaching or the truck has reached the store, but nothing more. And the kind of, say, for example, the truck was stopped at a store and the associate was supposed to come and start loading or unloading. They have no insights into when did the associate actually start loading or unloading, when were the goods actually taken out, when were they put in. There's just a lot of information that was missing, real-time information that was missing. As we see autonomous vehicles, these are loaded with sensors all around. They have cameras, they have LiDARs, they have GPS that are extremely precise. And all of this to say, all these analytics, all these insights, we can make it available to our customers in real time, right? We are processing, we are sharing it with our customers in real time. And this is essentially part of one of our product suites, which is called Gatik Fleet. So our core product is Gatik, the autonomy piece that we essentially provide the platforms. But then the Gatik Fleet is essentially the monitoring and analytics service. It's just exciting, and I'm always amazed to see how much the customers value this particular side of the product. Given the way things were running before, what we found was the drivers essentially did three jobs for them. It was driving, communication, and loading and unloading. Our autonomy piece essentially automates the driving piece. The communications part, we are going way beyond what they had before. They just have so much of access to the kind of information that's flowing in and out of it, and real-time updates. That has been one of the fascinating learnings from our deployments.
Now, you've grown from Ford Transit vans to box trucks. Are there any other vehicle types you're looking to take driverless?
Absolutely. So we started with Ford Transits back in 2019. And from our perspective, we essentially are designing our software, our stack, to be platform agnostic. So that's how we have started, and that's how it's architected. So we essentially do not want to limit these rollouts to a one specific platform. So we formed a partnership with Isuzu back in 2020, and we have been working very closely with them and have released several platforms through our collaboration with them. We'll be seeing a lot of deployments in the coming months and years on those platforms. We are also working with some of the other OEM partners and manufacturers in the background. We'll be announcing about them soon. One of the other things that we have been doing in terms of strategy is going a level up. We are forming these relationships and collaborations with tier ones now. And one such partnership we recently announced about was with Cummins. They essentially provide and enable engines on most of the vehicle platforms that serve the middle mile segment. And that has been a very crucial partnership for us to enable our solution a level deeper into the tier one solutions. And we have a couple of such partnerships with other tier ones going on that we will be announcing about it as well soon.
All right. So last question before I let you go. What are your predictions for the autonomous delivery industry for the next 5 to 10 years?
Absolutely, Katie. I think before I answer that, I would take a step back and think about like everything that has happened in the last few years, I would say, about last decade. If you think about the applications that were being promised back in 2016, were mainly revolving around robotaxis. Recently, in the last 3 years, we started hearing about long-haul trucking as well, that we will see driverless robotaxis. Back in 2016, 15, 16, we were being promised that we'll see robotaxis in 2019, 2020. Same with last year, we are now hearing timelines of 2024, 2025. Somehow it's always 3 to 4 years out every time we hear it. So there is something that needs to be learned. Like there is a pattern, right? Like, so I'm a very firm believer in the autonomy and the technology behind this. And I for sure believe that this technology and this solution is going to bring a lot of value in very interesting applications. One of them, I firmly believe, is going to be one of the first ones to be rolled out on commercially on public roads is going to be the application for B2B logistics or short-haul logistics at scale. I am skeptical in terms of seeing true robotaxis or passenger vehicles, fully driverless robotaxis or passenger vehicles at scale. And when I say at scale, it's for 100 plus cities deployed across different geographies. I have my doubts on that. And we have seen it time and again. And there is a strong reason for that. But on the other side, I very strongly believe that this technology is going to be enabled in a lot of different other applications, which are more structured and constrained, not just on public roads, but in other domains as well, yards and other stuff. So we'll be seeing more and more unique, interesting applications, which are more structured and constrained in the coming years, getting commercially deployed sooner.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Apeksha. This was a really interesting conversation. And for those looking to learn even more, be sure to tune in to Apeksha's session at GTC. It is called Structured Autonomy, Gaddock's Unique Approach to Commercializing the Middle Mile. Thank you again, Apeksha. And I'm looking forward to seeing you virtually at GTC.
Absolutely. Thank you, Katie. Thanks for having me here.